penultimate speaker of the conference is John Schwartz from Caltech, and he's going to talk about anomaly analysis of brain anti-brain systems.
Thanks. Let me begin by apologizing to those of you who've already heard this talk. So I'll be reporting on work that I did a few months ago together with Edward Witten. And the idea basically is to understand the Chern-Simons term in the effective action of D-brains. The Chern-Simons term is a kind of topological term, which in terms of a boundary state approach to conformal field theory can be thought of as originating from a Ramon-Ramon sector. And the rest of the D-brain action, effective action, is of a Dirac-Born-Infeld type, which in the same picture comes from the NSNS sector and is not topological. Each of them is of interest, but I'll be focusing on the Chern-Simons term here, and in particular I'll be addressing the question, to what extent can this term be determined by anomaly cancellation considerations? This gives me an excuse to reminisce about work from 1984 that I did with Michael Green, which is always fun, and to kind of try to recast it in a little bit of a more modern presentation. And then also, after having this more modern presentation, trying to extend it to other problems. So let me just remind you that if you have a D-brain whose world volume is of even dimension, 2n, then the effective action for this D-brain will contain a Chern-Simons term, which can be written as an integral of a 2n differential form. And this thing is linear in the Ramon-Ramon background fields, which could consist of a zero form, a two form, and so forth, which would be wedged then into other differential forms to give a total of 2n, where the rest of it, x2m, is a characteristic class of order m, which is made out of field strengths of the Yang-Mills fields and the Riemann curvature two form. So I will begin by reconsidering the good old type 1 superstring, just doing the analysis a little more slickly than we did at the first time, with a few more little tricks, which were, well, I'll reference the appropriate people at the appropriate time. So, as you know, the type 1 theory has potential Yang-Mills and local Lorentz anomalies, and that these arise from one-loop diagrams of chiral fermions, or chiral bosons, as there were any, but the type 1 theory doesn't have chiral bosons. And the effect of these things is that the one-loop effective action is not invariant under gaze transformations, so this variation can consist both of a Yang-Mills and of a local Lorentz gaze transformation, and the anomaly is characterized by a differential form, which is a 2n form. That expression is a little bit ugly in general, and it's nice to encode what this expression is in terms of a characteristic form written in two more dimensions. So a characteristic class in 2n plus two dimensions encodes the anomaly through the famous descent equations, where this being a characteristic class can locally be written as the exterior derivative of a Chern-Simons form, and then this Chern-Simons form is not gauge invariant, but it's locally the exterior derivative of a 2n form, and this is the anomaly density. So the first step in analyzing anomalies is to just work out the contributions of all the chiral fields in the theory, and each one contributes a certain amount to this characteristic class, and the formulas are all tabulated in this famous 1983 paper of Alvarez Gomez and Witten. I'll drop an overall normalization factor and just present the results up to that overall normalization. Greg Moore informs me that there's an issue of a factor of two, but that's not something that my analysis would be sensitive to. So I remind you that a chiral fermion, which is, say, left-handed or vial, it can be in some representation row of the Yang-Mills gauge group, and it contributes to the anomaly of an amount which is encoded in this expression here, where e to the if, as usual, is a formal sum of differential forms of different orders, which you obtain by expanding out the exponential using wedge products for multiplication. And then you take the trace in the representation that the fermion belongs to. This A. Ruf, or Dirac genus, I'll give you the formula for it in a moment. In any case, you multiply this out, take the 2n plus 2 form part of it, and that's the contribution of the vial fermion to the anomaly, arising from the famous n-gon diagram, or n plus 2-gon diagram. So, let me say that right. If I were in four dimensions, this would be a 6 form, and so n would be 2, and so it's n plus 1-gon diagram. That's the correct statement. Okay. So if we have a vial gravitina, it contributes an amount given by some other formula, which I won't write explicitly, but I'll find a way of finessing it so you don't need to know that formula explicitly. Then if you have a self-dual tensor, as you do in the type 2b theory, it gives a contribution proportional to this Schützebruch polynomial with a coefficient minus an eighth, and I will show you that formula. And in writing formulas like this, I don't always show the fact that you're supposed to extract the 2n plus 2 form part of the formula. So the way these characteristic classes are often described by mathematicians is to realize that the curvature can be brought to a canonical form by an orthogonal transformation and then characterized by some eigenvalue 2 forms, a lambda 1 up to a lambda n. So in that kind of a notation, the formula for the Dirac genus is given by this expression here, which is, has some power series expansion about the origin to give the different the forms of various different orders. And in a similar manner, the Hitzebruch L function also has a characterization in terms of these eigenvalue 2 forms, and that can also be expanded in some series in powers of lambda if you want to do that. Now, to do a slicker analysis than we've done in the past, I use a trick that was introduced by these people, and that's to note this identity between the A. Ruf expression and the Hitzebruch L function. And this possibly surprising formula is just a consequence of this simple identity among ordinary functions. So I will invoke this at a later point in the story, so I'll just point it out at this time. So let me remind you that in the type 2b string theory, or the low energy effective supergravity description of the 2b theory, either way, it was noted by Alvarez, Gomez, and Witten that if you write down the contribution of all the chiral fields, you have I 3 halves from the gravitinos minus I half, because they're right-handed, from the dilatinos, and there's a self-dual tensor which gives an IA. And they observe that if you take the 12-form part of this, that there are magic cancellations and you get zero, so that theory is anomaly-free. What I'm going to do is to utilize this identity to simplify the analysis for the type 1 theory. So in the type 1 theory, the supergravity multiplet consists of a Majorana-Weyl gravitino and a Majorana-Weyl dilatino. So their contribution to the anomaly is given by half of this difference. And using this identity up here, I can recast that in terms of the Hitzebruch function, or the Hitzebruch L polynomial, in the way shown here. So in writing down the type 1 anomaly, this will be the part, the contribution coming from the supergravity multiplet. To that, of course, we have to add the contributions of chiral fermions that have come from the vector multiplets, or in string language, are associated with the open strings of the type 1 theory. And type 1 theory can be formulated classically for any orthogonal or symplectic group. Let me, just to keep the story specific, focus on a general orthogonal group, SOM. So in this case, we just use the formula I gave you earlier for a vial fermion. We have an extra factor of a half because it's Majorana and vial. And the trace is taken in the antisymmetric tensor representation, which is what this symbol means, which is, of course, just the adjoint representation of the orthogonal group, because the fermions, being the supersymmetry partners of the gauge bosons, are in that representation. And then the idea is, rather than expanding all this stuff out in power series like we did in the old days and extracting the 12 form, which is tedious arithmetic, one can try to be a little bit more elegant about it. And so the more elegant thing to do is to use the well-known fact about Chern characters, that the Chern character of a tensor product representation is the product of the Chern characters in the individual representations. And so using that, you can deduce the fact that for an antisymmetric tensor, you get that the Chern character is given by a sum of two pieces, as shown here, where here the trace without any subscript refers to the fundamental, the n-dimensional representation of the orthogonal group. So substituting this expression into here, we now have that the anomaly is given by this. More precisely, the anomaly is the 12 form part of this. So remember, this term here represents the supergravity contribution. And now, a neat trick, which was also, I think, noticed by this in the work of Skruka and Saron, is that since we only want the 12 form part of this, we can rescale some of these field strengths. So for example, I can replace this 2F by an F and the R by an R over 2 if I compensate with a 2 to the 6th. And I can replace this R by R over 4 if I compensate by a 4 to the 6th. And these expressions are different, of course, but the 12 form parts will be the same. So that's a nice thing to do, because after you do that rescaling, then you see that this thing is a perfect square. Square of this and square of this are just the square roots of these two terms. But the term in the middle is the cross term, precisely because of this identity that I pointed out earlier on these characteristic classes. So in this way, you get that the 12 form is given by the 12 form part of this perfect square. Now, we definitely have a non-zero formula for the anomaly here, but the issue is whether we're going to be able to find a local counterterm to establish that the theory is anomaly-free. And what makes it possible to find a local counterterm is if this quantity that was squared, let me call it y, so in the previous formula we had y squared, when we expand this out in differential forms, this will be a sum of a 0 form plus a 4 form plus an 8 form. And what we need is that the 0 form piece of this should cancel. And this, in fact, corresponds to the cancellation of the Ramon-Ramon tadpole, which is another way of stating the consistency condition. So one simply has to analyze the 0 form part of this, which is very easy to do. The square root of this thing is 1 plus order r squared. This is 1 plus order r squared. The only thing you have to be careful about, you take this cosine f, it has a power series which starts with 1, and the trace of 1 is m, because it's in the fundamental representation of SOM. So altogether, the 0 form piece of this is m over 2 minus 16, and we see that if m is 32, corresponding to a gauge group SO32, that the Ramon-Ramon tadpole cancels. And then this expression y is just a sum of a 4 form plus an 8 form plus higher order stuff. And so when you square that, the 12 form part is uniquely just given by the cross term between y4 and y8. And at that point, one can use standard tricks to write down what the Chern-Simons term should be. So for example, you can take the 2 form potential, which is in the Ramon-Ramon sector of the supergravity multiplet, and wedge that into y8, and this is a candidate counterterm, which is of the Chern-Simons type that I pointed out earlier. I just put some coefficient mu in front of it that patches up all the normalizations I haven't bothered to track down here, so you adjust it as necessary. And now the idea is that the anomaly associated with this, which comes from the descent equations I showed you, will be precisely canceled if one takes this y4 and just goes through the descents and writes y4 as the exterior derivative of a Chern-Simons form, and that Chern-Simons form then has some gauge transformation involving parameters lambda 2. And so to get the cancellation of the anomaly that's implied by this expression, one just needs to require that the Ramon-Ramon 2 form field should have a gauge transformation proportional to lambda 2. So that's the usual old argument. So the only thing that's a little bit new is just the slicker way of doing the intermediate steps where you don't need lots of complicated arithmetic. An alternative description of the result is to write it as just C times Y, where C is understood to be a formal sum of Ramon-Ramon fields, which in the type 1 case would be a 2-form plus a 6-form. And if you do that, then both Y8 and Y4 occur in the formula. This is the expression I had previously. And this expression, which would now be there at the same time, would really just double the result, so you should replace mu by mu over 2. And you have to use the field equations, which say that that the field strength of C6 is the dual of the field strength of C2. So that's using the self-duality of the total Ramon-Ramon form. One nice thing about this description in terms of this expression y that I introduced is that we saw that it was a sum of two terms, namely this term and this term, which I'll call yb and yc. And these two individual terms have nice interpretation. Namely, this term here is understood as arising from world sheet boundaries in the boundary conformal field theory approach. And this one is arising from a cross cap. Or in another language, this is the D-brain contribution, and this would be the orientifold plane contribution. And in the anomaly form expression that we gave, when you square this thing, you get these three pieces, which can be associated with the three different genus zero world sheets that contribute to the anomaly, namely the cylinder corresponds to this, the Möbius strip to the cross term, and the Klein bottle to the square of the cross cap term. So what I'm saying is familiar to many of you, I'm sure. So let me turn now to the issue of adding antibrains to the story. I didn't emphasize it yet, although I mentioned something about D-brains on the last transparency, but the fact that we have an SL32 gauge group is understood in modern terms in saying that there are 32 spacetime filling D9 brains. Now, what was analyzed a couple years ago by Sugimoto and rediscovered by us on being unaware of his work until after we did it, is that instead of having 32 D9 brains, we could have M more of them, 32 plus M D9 brains and M anti-D9 brains. This would be in the spirit of the proposals of Ashok-Sen, of course, where this would be just some unstable vacuum configuration that would be have the same total charge as the stable one that we just discussed. This is unstable because 9 brains and anti-9 brains want to annihilate. We know that they want to annihilate because if you look at the open strings that connect the 9 brains to the anti-9 brains, the lowest mode is tachyonic. And when the tachyon rolls to its bottom, the standard story is that that represents the annihilation of the 9 brains and the anti-9 brains. However, when you don't roll, when you're at this local maximum or saddle point of the tachyons, you're still looking at a classical solution of the field equations, and you should have perturbative consistency, even though it isn't a non-perturbatively stable vacuum. And requiring perturbative consistency means that the anomaly cancellation should continue to work even in this peculiar situation. So this suggests considering the gauge theory associated with the 32 plus M 9 brains and M anti-9 brains, which is now SO32 plus M associated with the 9 brains and SOM associated with the anti-9 brains. And let me not belabor the calculation, it works as before. The bottom line is that you get formulas that look almost identical to the preceding formulas where you didn't have the extra brains and anti-brains. The only difference is that in the previous formula where the expression trace of cosine of the field strength tense two form appeared, that gets replaced by what could be called a super trace. And by that we simply mean the trace associated with the nine brains minus the trace associated with the anti-nine brains. This has the same zero form part, or same constant part, as the original expression, because when you take the one here, you're taking the trace of one in the fundamental representation of this group, which is 32 plus m, and then from that you're subtracting the trace of one in the fundamental representation of this group, which is m. So the zero form piece of this is still m as it was before, or still 32, excuse me, as it was before. So, in fact, that's what I just say here at the top of this transparency, so that the final formulas work as before. But an interesting question is, what were the chiral fields in the theory that gave this result involving this replacement of traces by super traces? And for the strings associated with connecting nine brains to nine brains, we know that the Majorana-Weyl fermions are just as they were when they were just 32 of these things, are still in the adjoint representation of the relevant gauge group, which is now SO32 plus M. It was also well known that the open strings connecting the nine brains to anti-nine brains have a reverse GSO projection rule, which results in their giving Weyl fermions of the opposite chirality, namely right-handed, in the bifundamental representation of the two groups, because they're connecting the two different sets of D-brains. And in particular, there's also a tachyon because of the reverse GSO projection, as I mentioned earlier. The thing that came as a bit of a surprise to us is that in the spectrum of the 9-bar open strings, you don't find the fermions are not in the adjoint representation of the group, gauge group, SOM. Rather, they're in the symmetric traceless, the symmetric tensor, including the trace, instead. And at first this is surprising, but you have to remember, first of all, the anti-nine brains are going to break the supersymmetry. So why should you have the fermions in the same representation of the gauge bosons? It's breaking the supersymmetry. Secondly, the fact that you're breaking the supersymmetry means there ought to be a Goldsteno in the spectrum, a massless chiral fermion that's a singlet of the gauge groups. And here you can see one, namely because the symmetric tensor has a trace, and that's a singlet. And so that trace is identified as the Goldstone, a fermion, or Goldsteno, associated with the broken supersymmetry due to the presence of these brain-anti-brain pairs. And to understand this spectrum, one can look at the problem a little bit microscopically. It was discussed in Sugimoto's paper and in a little more detail in ours. I'll only give you part of the story. I don't have time to give you the whole story. I refer you to the manuscript for that. But roughly speaking, the idea is that to describe this system of brains and anti-brains, it's useful to use this kind of superspace formalism due to the mathematician Quillen, in which one introduces a Chan-Payton label that can be regarded as being either bosonic or fermionic, depending on whether you're associated to the brains or the anti-brains. So you think of the Chan-Payton label as being bosonic on the brains and fermionic on the anti-brains. And then that kind of a picture leads you to the right GSO projection rule to produce the desired spectrum. So in this, if you can look first at the type 2B theory, the DD and D-bar strings would both have this standard GSO projection because you either get two pluses or two minuses, and either way it's standard. So the only thing that would be non-standard, it would be when you run from a plus to a minus. And you want, and so this extra minus sign just accounts for the reverse GSO projection rule on the DD bar open strings and gives the tachyon and the right-handed massless fermions in the bifundamental. But that's for the type 2 case. In the type 1, the additional ingredient is that we have to combine this with the Orientifold projection, which is basically is world sheet parity, and this, which makes the strings unoriented. And there's a little bit of freedom as to how you do this. If we insist on doing it in such a way that we end up with an SLP gauge group for the 9-9 strings, then the rest of the story follows. The alternative possibility, which I'll discuss a little later, is that you get a symplectic group here. And that's been known for many, many years, that those are the two possible classical groups for open strings, orthogonal or symplectic. So if you make the GSO projection rule that gives you the orthogonal group here, then including the effect of the Orientifold projection has no more dramatic effects on the 9-9 or 9-9 bar system. But in the 9-bar, 9-bar system, the claim is that the projection gives you the usual rule in the NS sector, but it gives you this reverse, an additional minus sign in the Ramon sector. In other words, that the NS sector wave functions are anti-symmetric tensors corresponding to the adjoint representation of the orthogonal group, and the Ramon sector wave functions are symmetric tensors, as I indicated before, giving you a symmetric tensor representation of the gauge group on the antibranes. And the derivation that what I've just said gives this result is explained in our paper using a path integral formulation for the Möbius strip. And I won't go into more detail about that here. So let me say that that this result can be, once you accept it, can be easily memorized by a nice mnemonic. And the mnemonic is that if you have, say, a case where you have an orthogonal groups on brains, you think of the antibranes as just corresponding, replacing M by minus M. So if you have antibranes, so the adjoint representation of SOM has this dimension and corresponds to anti-symmetric tensor left-handed fermions. And so for the fermions on the antibranes, you replace M by minus M, which is this, and that tells you that you need this representation. So that's a mnemonic that always gives you the right answer. This mnemonic also works for type 2 theories where you have unitary groups, because M squared just turns into M squared, so nothing happens. But for fundamentals, you get M to minus M, and that sign reversal is interpreted as a reversal of chirality. So let me now discuss the type 2b theory. I've already told you about the basic type 2b theory, where the anomaly just cancels very nicely. And one can jazz up the story following a suggestion of Srednicki a couple of years ago, in which one adds 9 brains and anti-9 brains to the type 2b vacuum. And so if you do that, the vacuum gauge group would have a UM gauge symmetry associated with the 9 brains and another UM gauge symmetry associated with the anti-9 brains. Again, this is an unstable vacuum with tachyons, of course, but still it should have a consistent perturbative description. And the chiral fermions, just using the rules I just gave you, are that you get the adjoint left-handed chiral fermions, which are Majorana vial for the 9 brains, and also for the anti-9 brains, and then the 9-9 bar ones are bifundamentals, and they're just vial because the strings are oriented. So if you just write down the anomalies associated with these different chiral fermions, the contribution of the 9-9 ones is here, the 9-bar ones is here, and then these guys contribute these two terms. And so that's the expression then for the anomaly polynomial. We also have I haven't written any contribution from the supergravity sector because we already said that that cancels when you take the 12 form part of it. And so this is the whole expression. Remember, we didn't have an anomaly polynomial when m was 0. So it's interesting that when you add the brain anti-brain pairs, you now do have an anomaly polynomial in the 2B theory. But it's of the type that for which these have consistency by the same tricks as before. So using this identity for the Chern character, one can again recast this thing as in a factorized form. And so the factorized expression is that I is a half of yy star, where y is now this expression. And if I use the same supertrace notation I used as before, this difference of traces I just call supertrace. This time I don't replace the exponential by a cosine like I did before, because for unitary groups you have odd powers as well as even powers. In the case of orthogonal groups, we only had even powers, which is why I replaced exponentials by cosines. So this has the same interpretation as it did before, and it looks just like the expression we had for the boundary term. But now there is no cross-cap term. But that's not surprising, because we know that in the type 2B theory, the strings are oriented, and there are no cross-caps or orientable planes. But here we're dealing with a problem where there are D-brains, and so it shouldn't be surprising, therefore, that there is a D-brain or boundary contribution to the anomaly. And so, as before, we can cancel the anomaly by adding a Chern-Simons term of this form, where, again, the C is a formal sum of the various Ramon-Ramon fields that you have in the 2B theory. And again, the equations of motion show that there are dualities relating C0 to C8, C2 to C6, and then the C4 has a self-dual field strength. And so this is a little bit formal in the sense that you have to understand that self-duality. It's been remarked by various authors. I found the paper by Krauss and Larson especially readable, but other authors have also discussed it, that it's easy to incorporate the tachyon fields into this expression. Remember, this is Chern-Simons term is a particular term in the effective action of this brain system. And so it's interesting to incorporate the tachyons if you want to understand the Sen condensation mechanism, for instance. And so the trick is to generalize the connection, which has just the gauge fields for the brains and the antibrains, into a matrix where you put the tachyon fields, remember they were fundamentals, into the off-diagonal places. And so this is what Quillen called a superconnection. And this just accords with, remember this grading I mentioned where you had bosonic Chan-Payton labels for brains and fermionic Chan-Payton labels for antibrains. The structure of this matrix just accords with that, because these A's are one forms and the T's are zero forms. Or you can form a supercurvature by some obvious kind of formula, and that takes this expression here. So once you do that, there's a natural way to incorporate the tachyons into the Chern-Simons formula, and that's just to replace this, what I called supertrace before, by the supertrace now of the exponential of this thing. So remember, when we had tachyons equal to 0 previously, this was exactly the quantity I had. And now it's just jazzed up in some non-trivial way by the tachyon fields. And that's the formula that other authors have found from other considerations. Well, let me discuss a couple other interesting theories in 10 dimensions for which there is a similar anomaly analysis. And I'll begin by discussing another theory that was found in the same paper of Sugimoto 2 years ago, which is a 10-dimensional theory that's related to the type 1, but it's not supersymmetric, as we'll see. And it has a gauge group, which we call SP16, or some that other notation, some people would call that USP32, right? It's, in any case, it's the group whose fundamental representation has dimension 32. And you'll recall that when I discussed the construction of, when I discussed the brain-anti-brain system and the Chan-Peyton and GSO projection rules for the type 1, I pointed out that there was one place where one made a choice that gave an orthogonal group rather than a symplectic group. And if you make the other choice for the world sheet projection, which just involves some extra minus signs, that then when you do this projection, instead of getting an oriental fold plane with Ramon-Ramon charge minus 32, sometimes called an 09 minus plane, now you get an oriental fold plane with Ramon-Ramon charge plus 32, often called an 09 plus plane. And so in this construction, since you have the Ramon-Ramon charge being plus 32 from the oriental fold plane, to cancel the Ramon-Ramon charge in this case, you need to add 32 anti-D9 brains. So just the reverse from the story in the usual type 1 theory, where we had to add 32 D9 brains to cancel the Ramon-Ramon charge. In this case, the usual type 1 story, the tensions cancel because the O minus plane had negative tension and the D brains had positive tension. In this case, the tensions don't cancel because the O plus plane has positive tension and the anti-D9 brains also have positive tension. So in any case, the modified GSO projection in this case leads to gauge bosons that are given by symmetric tensors in the NS sector, and Majorana-Weil fermions given by anti-symmetric tensors in the Chan-Peyton labels. Well, the gauge bosons tell you what the group is, and being symmetric tensors, it tells you, you deduce that it's a symplectic group. And now the fermions are not in the same multiplet, they're in the anti-symmetric tensor, which is no longer the adjoint representation. It's the same representation you had in the type 1 theory, and because of that, the anomaly cancellation is going to work exactly the same way it did in the type 1 theory. You don't even need to repeat it, it's step for step the same. But you're dealing with a non-supersymmetric theory because the gauge bosons are different. It's also interesting that this anti-symmetric tensor, in this case, is a reducible representation. Because with regard to the symplectic group, an anti-symmetric tensor has a symplectic trace, which is a singlet. And that's nice because that's the Goldstino associated with the broken supersymmetry that you have in this particular example. While the closed string sector is identical to the type 1 theory, contains n equal 1 supergravity, and so that it may be surprising that that's exactly what you have in a theory with broken supersymmetry, but it's true. And so the chiral fermion condom is absolutely identical to the type 1 theory, and anomaly cancellation works with identical formulas to what I showed you for the type 1 theory. Now, I mentioned that the tensions of the 9 brain and the oriental fold plane don't cancel. And in fact, those tensions include a factor involving the dilaton, which, depending whether you're in string metric or canonical metric, is either e to the minus phi or e to the 3 phi over 2. But in any case, what that really means is that you have some potential involving the dilaton, which is a runaway driving the system to zero coupling. So this theory, even though it's tachyon free and non-supersymmetric, is probably not terribly interesting because of this feature. Some people have discussed the possibility that after some compactification you might be able to stabilize that. I haven't examined that myself. You can add 9-9 bar pairs to the system, just like I did for the type 1 theory, so that you get an unstable system with this gauge group, and the anomaly analysis is identical to what I showed you in the type 1 case, so I won't repeat it. So let me tell you about another non-supersymmetric tachyon-free theory in 10 dimensions. Well, there's one you already know about. That's the 016-016 heterotic string. I have nothing to say about that one. So we'll move on to the third one, which is a theory that was discovered by Sognatti in 1995. And it's constructed as an orientifold of the type 0B theory. and it has gauge group U32. So the type 0B theory, let me remind you, is related to the type 2B, but it involves a different GSO projection. It's just the GSO projection that removes all the fermions and keeps all the bosons. So keeping all the bosons means that the NSNS sector at the massless level is the usual one of type 2B, but you also have the tachyon. And the Ramon-Ramon sector gets doubled from the usual one, which is normally cut in half by the by the GSO projection. And there are no fermions. Now, being doubled, the Ramon-Ramon sector does not have a self-duality constraint, and so it's not chiral. So the type 0B theory is just a bosonic theory, and it has no chiral boson, so it's trivially anomaly-free. It's a theory with a tachyon. It's therefore, well, it's an interesting theory for other reasons, but from the point of view of just 10 dimensions, it's not very interesting. And so what Sagnotti did was to consider an orientifold projection of this that removes the tachyon and half of the massless Ramon-Ramon fields. So when you do that, you're left with a closed string spectrum for which the Ramon-Ramon sector is identical to that of the 2B theory. And the NSNS spectrum is identical to that of the type 1 theory. But there's still no closed string fermions. But we do have an anomaly contribution coming here from the Ramon-Ramon sector, which contains this four-form of the self-dual field strength. But there are also D-brains and open strings. So the projection results in an orientifold plane containing, in some normalization, minus 32 units of Ramon-Ramon charge, requiring the addition of 32 D9 brains. And Sagnotti argues that the 9-9 strings connecting these 9 brains give U32 gauge fields and vial fermions, which are in the adjoint not in the adjoint representation. They're in the anti-symmetric tensor representation. Notice the previous non-supersymmetric theory I talked about was non-supersymmetric because supersymmetry was realized non-linearly with the Goldsteino. This theory just is explicitly non-supersymmetric. There's no gravitino in the supergravity multiplet at all. No need for a Goldsteino, and there isn't one. And there's no reason the multiplet should be supersymmetric, and it's not. You have adjoint U32 gauge fields and anti-symmetric tensor vial fermions. This is twice as many vial fermions as you have in the usual type 1, because in type 1 they'd be Majorana vial. But this is a complex representation of U32, so they can only be vial here. But it's just right for anomaly cancellation. And that's easy to see. Because we have from this self-dual tensor in the supergravity multiplet, we have this contribution. And then from our U32 anti-symmetric tensor vial fermions, we have this contribution. And now the same manipulations as before show that this can be, that the 12-form piece of this coincides with a half of y squared, where y is given by this formula. A simpler way of understanding this is that remember that this self-dual anti-symmetric tensor canceled off a pair of Majorana vial gravitinos and dilatinos in the 2B theory. But it's only half as many gravitinos and dilatinos that cancel off the vial fermions in the type 1 theory. So the doubling that you have here relative to the type 1 is clearly required. In any case, you can check the cancellation of the Ramon-Ramon charge. Again, it's just because the trace of 1 is 32 when you're in the fundamental representation of U32 in this case, so that this has now zero form piece. Of course, when you expand this out, it now has Y2 plus Y4 plus Y6, etc., but no Y0. And so you can again write down a Chern-Simons term of this form. And then the anomaly cancellation works in the usual manner. And this can be also generalized to addition of more brains and anti-brains, and then you just replace this trace e to the if by the super trace, as I've discussed previously. So let me just summarize what I've told you before I give you my vision. So I've discussed various 10-dimensional string theories in which the Chern-Simons terms associated with D-brains can be determined by anomaly cancellation considerations. And we showed that the addition of brain-anti-brain pairs is always nicely taken account of just by replacing traces in these Chern characters by super traces using super connections. And that sometimes this accounts for somewhat surprising matter representations associated with anti-D-brains, as we saw for the type 1 theory. In our manuscript, we also discussed some six-dimensional theories, which I've omitted from this discussion just because it's more or less more of the same, just a little more complicated, and doesn't really teach you any dramatic new lessons. So that's the end of that part of the talk. And now there's the question of whether or not to respond to the organizer's desire for vision. So the vision thing. So obviously I can't predict the future better than anybody else. So all I can do is to try, what I do have going for me, maybe more than some of you, is that I've been working on this for a long time and have experience. So I can at least address the question, what lessons have I learned that had I known them earlier would have been very useful? So the main one is what I would call the no coincidence principle. And that is that at various times, it's been obvious that certain things that showed up in different places were the same. And one didn't pay much attention to that. But had one taken these coincidences seriously, one might have been in a position to make important discoveries. So, for example, I've known, and many other people have known for more than 20 years, that the type 2A supergravity is the dimensional reduction of 11-dimensional supergravity. And some people were even inspired to write down world volume actions for two brains in 11 dimensions by analogy with the string world sheet action in the 2A theory, and even remarked that they were related by dimensional reduction. Despite all those clues, it took many, many years till, well, you know who the people were, Townsend, Witten, etc., focused on this relationship and found the right interpretation of it. Another thing that many people have known for a long, long time is that the symmetries associated with anti-Sitter groups are the same symmetries as those associated with conformal symmetry groups. And I'm very much aware of that. And in fact, in the case of the type 2B n equal 4 correspondence, I knew that the supergroups were the same too. In fact, I played a role in the development of both of those theories even, but failed to, of course, to focus on the correspondence. So the obvious question is, what other coincidences are lying around? So if you're so smart, what can you do for me today? So I've discussed this over lunch with Edward, and he's remarked that one thing that's curious is this no-scale supergravity. And if you were to take this principle seriously, you might wonder whether this will survive additional checks. I mean, as you know, this no-scale supergravity can be interpreted as a cancellation of a cosmological constant in some approximation. And so you might ask whether that cancellation persists when you include more effects. Everyone I know would conjecture that the answer is no. And that's probably the right answer. But in any case, if you follow this principle seriously, that's one example of something you might want to examine. I don't have other good examples that I can think of. Maybe some of you will offer some in the discussion of coincidences that we've failed to exploit. So the only other thing I can say about the future is I can tell you what it is I want to work on in the next few months. I'm not optimistic that I'll get anywhere, but I think it's an interesting problem, so I'll tell you what the problem is. And that is, as I already remarked in India, is it would be really nifty if one could find an analog of the Born-Infeld action that involved the Riemann tensor. That if one had such a formula, there are all sorts of obvious things you might try to do with it. So the question is there any chance of finding such a formula and having it have a well-defined meaning in some well-defined approximation setup? Well, I don't know. I have some ideas as to a strategy for trying to construct such an formula. I'm not terribly optimistic that I'll be able to carry it out. I'd be interested if anyone has any comments as to whether it's a worthwhile project or not. Or anyway, I guess I'll stop there.
The connection between the anomaly cancellation for local transformations and the Tadpole cancellation is somewhat connected. Less connected is global anomalies. Are those checkoffs on these examples that you mentioned?
I haven't thought about it. Maybe Edward had something to say.
Actually, a comment on coincidences, Born-Infeld action and Nambu-Gotta action. It's basically the same formula.
Yes. Right?
So that would have suggested deep brains, for example.
Oh, another ex post facto.
Right, one. Right. Yes. But a question about these Sagnotti models, do all of them have uncancelled NSNS tadpoles? For example, that model you discussed, does it have a dilaton tadpole? Or?
Probably. I haven't examined it, but it probably does.
Yeah, my impression is that in these non-supersymmetric models, once after you worked hard to cancel the RR tadpoles, you're still generically left with it.
That doesn't make the theory inconsistent. It means you'll generate a cosmological term at one loop, isn't that right?
Right, but it tends to roll off.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I would assume that there are problems like that. It might be worthwhile to explore whether this particular theory, how far this theory goes before it dies. Because I don't know the answer to that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, if there are no more questions, let's thank John again.